Welcome to the Patriot League's Pillar Citizen Spotlight. My name is Todd Bontrager, and I'm the Vice President of the Patriot League. We're a nonpartisan public advocacy organization that seeks the common good of society through the advancement of America's founding principles, working to advance the principles of traditional marriage, parental rights, religious liberty, and the humanity of the unborn, four pillars of moral truth that we believe sustain America's ability to not only survive, but also thrive. We're joined today by Father John Paul Leyba. Father JP, we're pleased to have you as the Spotlight guest, and we look forward to chatting with you on these pillar principles.
Thank you.
Father JP serves as pastor at St. Francis Cabrini Catholic Church in Littleton, Colorado, and we've come to know him as a leader within his community who believes strongly in the pillar principles. We've invited Father JP to the Spotlight to hear his perspective as a religious leader on the pillar principles. Father JP's remarks are not intended to be an official statement of St. Francis Cabrini Catholic Church or its affiliates, but reflect his sincerely held personal and religious beliefs. Father JP, we'd like to start off with what is your primary motivation for believing in and defending the pillar principles?
Well, I recognize that the principles really are foundational to human flourishing. I really see them as a somewhat independent of religious affiliation, and I think that's reflected in the membership of the Pillar Project, in that it's people from different religious perspectives recognizing there are certain things in human life which really promote a good life. And so it's not just about my own perspective, but just about being human. So I think it's important.
Sure. And we've worked with you since 2014 as part of our Pillar Project, a non-ecumenical coalition of religious leaders calling on their governing officials to defend the Pillar Principles. And as a member of the Catholic community, why, in your view, should the Catholic community not only believe in, but also advocate for these principles?
Pretty much the same reason. I think our concern is not just for ourselves and our own lives, but also, you know, the Christian community has always been concerned about non-Christians as well, and that's one of the reasons why I think it flourished in the first, second, third centuries. Was its concern wasn't its own people, but it was the concerns of all the human race, and they reached out to that, and it was a big something that really separated Christian communities in the first century, and to some degree, it still kind of does.
Good. You know, there are some Catholics who say members of your religious community shouldn't concern themselves with advocating for the pillar principles because they're a distraction to more important things or to more important spiritual work. How do you respond to that type of sentiment?
Well, we're not, our physical life is not a separate reality from our spiritual journey. The two are integrated, they go with each other. So you can't ignore spiritual or physical realities and political realities and think that they're not going to affect your spiritual journey as well. We're connected, our body, minds, and hearts, our souls are all connected. And so that's why you can't just like compartmentalize and expect that somehow they're not going to, they're in separate camps and won't affect each other.
Do you believe that holding public office can be a spiritual calling?
Oh, sure. But I do believe that holding the public office, there's a responsibility, obviously, for the broader concern. But the broader concern, I think, is a human concern. So beyond just your own particular religious affiliation, but a broader concern for humanity.
In your view, how do the pillar principles positively impact society?
Well, so one of the pillars is defending the unborn or recognizing the humanity of the unborn. And I think that's, just starting with that, it's foundational. So if we're respecting and honoring and defending the unborn, that then follows throughout all the stages of life. I think once you've degenerated into ignoring really the most vulnerable individuals of the society, there's no reason for that not to migrate into any other group that we might choose mm-hmm. to say that they're not worth defense. Mm-hmm. They're not worth honoring or respecting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's the reason why it's important. Yeah, all the way across.
Yeah, that's good. It's my understanding that a person's gender is viewed by most within the Catholic community as a gift and design of one's creator.
Yeah.
Okay. If this is the case, then how should your community interact with individuals who, let's say, struggle to recognize their gender as such, or who may be dealing with other similar issues?
Well, I see it the same as really just the plethora of issues that we encounter and struggle with as human beings. Yeah. We're not perfectly integrated biologically, psychologically, spiritually. And so whenever there's a problem in any of these areas, physical, spiritual, we try to figure out, okay, where's the problem, and try to address it, correct? Mm. But it's not a degradation of the humanity. You know, I was born with a birth defect, and that doesn't mean that I'm less than human or less, right, or should not be respected, but that for those who may have the expertise to be able to help me, that they would try to help me.
Yeah.
So I just see that whole spectrum of human struggle as being all part of that.
Yeah, that's good. If, let's say, these individuals wish to attend one of your religious services to hear your teaching, again, assuming it's not for the purpose of being disruptive, would you welcome them?
I do, and I would, yes. We have members in my community from all kinds of backgrounds.
Yeah.
They're all welcome, and some of them, you know, I've met with, and we've kind of engaged in kind of a dialogue about what does it mean mm-hmm. to have whatever struggles that they may bring. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Let's kind of change gears a bit here and talk about some laws that have been passed this year in the state of Colorado by some of our elected state legislators. One bill allows certain individuals whose birth certificates reflect their male gender and vice versa to go to their county clerk and get a replacement birth certificate indicating a different gender as though it was the original. Okay. In your view, should citizens whose gender is clearly identifiable at birth be able to obtain a government-issued birth certificate indicating a gender that's other than their gender that was witnessed or observed at birth?
Well, I think most of these issues, really at their grounding, are they're not particularly about spiritual convictions, religious convictions, but about really science and, you know, kind of what does it mean to be human biologically? What does it mean to be human? I mean, the chromosomes indicate what our, you know, gender is. It seems to me that would be indicative and would determine where you're coming from, you know, your gender identity.
Yeh.
And if there's a conflict between what the mind perceives as gender and what the biology says, then I think you go to what the biology says, because the biology is right in front of you.
Okay. Let's talk about another law that was passed this year, which makes it legal for an adult, in this case a psychotherapist, to have private conversations with a parent's child as young as 12 years of age without the parent's permission or even knowledge that the conversation has taken place.
Right.
So what are your thoughts on that matter?
Well, I think if the default always has to be to the parents. They're the closest to the situation.
Yes.
Their rights to love their children and to bring them up as safely as they can really needs to be honored. That's the very foundation of familiar structure.
Yeah.
People that care for you, that provide for you, that presumably love you, really should have that first, should have, you know, that as being their motivating factor for however they help their children.
Yeah.
So to keep them away from that is dangerous. It's for everybody.
Yeah. Let's kind of shift gears and talk a little bit about marriage. Is marriage, like gender, viewed by most within the Catholic community as something given by the Creator, or is it generally viewed as a cultural construct?
Well, I think it's interesting. So the Catholic Church recognizes marriage as a human reality, not necessarily a religious one. We look at it as Catholics, we take the human reality of marriage, man and woman joining for the intention or desire to be together and to have children as a human reality, and we take that and we believe that Jesus then poured his graces upon that human reality, and we call that sacrament, marriage. But it begins with a human institution, a human reality. And so that's where it starts. So from wherever you're beginning, you know, it starts with that.
What significance does the diversity of gender play within marriage? In other words, there's the male and the female, and so we're contrasting this with maybe
female and female,
yes,
and male and male,
such as
So,
as we contrast those, what's the value or the significance that that would play in marriage itself, in the basic construct of marriage?
Well, so wherever you find marriage, you find male and female attracted to each other, and that the marriage itself, it's beyond just simply the attraction of two individuals to each other, but their capacity and desire for children.
Sure.
And children come out of the natural biological union of male and female. So it's you know, so that's that family structure. So trying to artificially create that structure without the male-female, it's a contradiction. You know, male or male and male aren't able to bring forth children. It's just kind of natural realm. I think when people grow up on farms, you kind of have a good sense for the basic kind of way that life works.
Yeah, that's true. Concerning the pillar of religious liberty, so one of the other pillars we're speaking of here, there was a bill proposed in the 2018 legislature to prohibit some members of the religious community from providing certain counseling services, specifically, if an individual under age 18 who struggled with unwanted same-gender attraction, in other words, parents approving of the counseling, came to you, this bill would prohibit you from providing your counsel if that counsel involved words or actions that supported their desire to reduce same-gender attraction. And this ban would have been in place regardless of whether your counsel simply involved the conveyance of the traditional Catholic teaching as it relates to same-gender attraction. So what are your thoughts on this type of proposed legislation?
Well, I think we're blessed in the United States to have a basic governmental construct which is intended to preserve the right of religious practice and religious dialogue and religious thought. And it just, to me, it just goes right to that, to the First Amendment. Or is it the First Amendment?
It's an important element to just be aware as a citizen and to understand the full ramifications of that. It seems that those who are working to undermine the pillar principles have most of the momentum in culture right now. How do we go about changing that, or do we just accept it?
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead and
there are those who are working to undermine the pillar principles.
Yeah.
And they have the momentum, it seems, where we seem to be kind of in the minority, those who are standing in support of the principles of moral truth.
Okay.
How do we go about changing that? Or do we just go along and say, well, we can't do anything about it?
Well, you know, there's this reading the story of Wilberforce out in England, and the battle he had year after year after year trying to eliminate the slave trade that the English were involved in. And you look at that battle and it's like he has, you would think there was no hope. Mm. And the next year he'd come down, present the legislation, turned down. The next year he presented again, turned down. Next year presented again, turned down. Next year presented again. And we look at it now and we're like, he was right. I mean, there's not even a doubt. There's no question he was right.
Yeah.
But that society, there was too much money involved. There were too many people who had too much to lose to not put up a fight. I think when it's true and it's good and beautiful, eventually the human heart recognizes that. So I think persistence, the truth has to persist.
Yeah.
And I think eventually people will recognize that, and because we recognize, I mean, because they will. It's a human, just natural human truth.
Right.
Eventually, all the other kind of motivations for people not wanting to let go, I think begin to fade. So I think it's persistence. Yeah. The truth does win.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. In 1776, we have the American founders who wrote in the Declaration of Independence, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life," so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
With this in mind, what are you observing in society that is feeding the mindset, I guess, that disregards the dignity of human life?
Well, first of all, I think that structure and that statement is brilliant.
Yeah.
I think it's based on the natural law, and it's a recognition that there's something, there's a reality that's beyond our definitions and our constructs. We can construct societies, construct political processes and authorities and all this and hierarchy, whatever. But there's a reality that precedes all of that, which doesn't lend itself to whatever to our own desires and our own manipulations. And so respecting human beings, respecting life. Yeah. I believe because of that core, I guess we're going back again, that's the main reason why we had an argument to eliminate slavery in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. We know that citizens who care deeply about the Pillar Principles often hold very different or divergent theological perspectives or have no theological basis at all. In your view, should these Pillar citizens work together to advance our shared Pillar Principles? And if so, then on what basis?
Oh, very much so. So I think I've been alluding to that since the beginning of the conversation.
Yeah.
Because what we have in common is something that transcends our particular religious convictions. I think most religious convictions, in my kind of sense for them, that differentiate us are based on a revelation, things that have been revealed to us, we believe, by God.
Mm.
But there's also a foundation of truth which is simply observed. And I observe it. An atheist can observe it.
Absolutely.
A Baptist observes it, an evangelical, Protestant, Catholic, a Muslim, a Jew.
Jewish faith.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. What message would you have relating or for other religious leaders or those outside the Catholic community, words of encouragement perhaps, to help sustain or advance these Pillar Principles and to just give them a sense of encouragement that what they're saying is can be good and vital for their organizations and their assemblies as well.
Yeah. I think it's kind of one of my own journey in the priesthood. I came to it late. So this role is leadership, the idea of leadership is just sort of developing in my own understanding, my own experience and my own responsibilities. And recognizing that people really are looking for a reason to hope, right? Another scripture passage, but it applies to everyone. They're looking for a reason to hope. They're looking for leadership. And I think when you're strong about that, it encourages people, not only to encourage them in terms of just kind of the interior convictions, but it also encourages them to do the right thing in their own lives, within their own families.
Yeah.
No matter what your religious convictions are, you know, the power of leadership is undeniable. And I think the value of especially spiritual leadership is that we recognize that there's something that transcends us and our
sure.
personalities and our charisms, and that is truth.
Sure.
And we're all engaged in the desire for understanding the truth, and that transcends us, and people are looking for that.
Yeah.
And I think, so I'd encourage leadership of all kind to step out.
Mm.
And people are looking for that.
Yeah. Excellent. What type of unique experiences have you, I guess, noted or seen within the Hispanic community itself relating to these pillar principles?
Well, as a pastor, I've been a priest for 16 years. I've had parishes, rural parishes and urban parishes, poor parishes, and, you know, reasonably affluent parishes.
Okay.
One of the parish experience I had was in a remote farming community that was shrinking.
Hmm.
And very few children in the community.
Hmm.
And so at masses on weekends, very few children. And that really, when they're absent, you notice the absence.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not a lot of life. My last assignment, I had about half my community was kind of reasonably long-term American-born community, English-speaking,
mm-hmm.
and half of it were reasonably recent immigrants, probably within the last, most everybody's probably within the last 60 years, immigrant Spanish-speaking
okay.
into the United States. And the difference between the life that they were engaged in, it was just life, being alive, being joyful, being engaged, being active. There was such a big difference between the two different communities.
Mm.
So from the Hispanic perspective, family really is important. And these children thrive. They just thrive. They're joyful. They interact. And it's not like, you know, there's such a mindset in America of trying to minimize the impact of life, of living.
Mm.
We live life on this kind of plane.
Yeah.
You know, Pink Floyd speaks about being comfortably numb. You know, we're just kind of living life. As Christians, we believe in living life to the full. Jesus
yeah.
says, I came to eat my life and have it to the full.
Yeah.
And you see within the Hispanic community and my own upbringing that we're just engaged, and it's just
yeah.
this just wild sort of and imaginative and beautiful life experience. And I would invite the children to come forward for a blessing. And they'd come pouring out of the pews, their beautiful little faces, and I just send a blessing upon them all. And it's such a big difference. And I think children embody hope.
Hmm.
When people have children,
sure.
they recognize that it's not just about them. That's when they start to worry about the future. That's
sure.
what they worry about. You know, what's the world going to be like? That's when they start worrying about even the environment,
yeah.
you know, which
yeah.
is not one of the issues that we talk about. But when people have children, they think, ooh, the environment matters.
Mm-hmm.
The political system matters.
Mm-hmm.
What are my children going to grow into? What are they going to get as far as the political structure? Are they going to be free like me? And so that's a very Hispanic, and really it's not just limited to Hispanic, but I'm speaking from my own upbringing and my own experience working with them. That changes a lot. And
mm-hmm.
I think you start looking at the Pillar Project things, you see the value of parenting,
mm-hmm.
of love within the family,
mm-hmm.
you see the value of children
mm-hmm.
From their origins through life. You see the value of those connections and caring about people all the way through the stages,
yeah.
including when we're talking about the battle over assisted suicide,
mm-hmm.
that even people who are hopeless are worth, their humanity isn't gone.
Yeah.
And most people that are struggling and suffer, what they desire is relationship
yeah.
with God and with each other.
To keep that dignity, that respect
yeah,
for human life
dignity.
Itself.
Right.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, What are some of your final thoughts for us as it relates to the pillar principles? I mean, there are many of us out here as pillar citizens who look towards doing what they can to advance and promote these pillars of moral truth. How would you kind of encapsulate or summarize, I guess, what you would say is critical to furthering and advancing the pillars, whether it's within the Catholic community or outside? Or
it's a really good question. I'm thinking about it in terms of what I spoke about at Mass this past weekend, at my Masses. Mm. Hope.
Sure.
Hope is the foundation. I think even though when you look at the media, and the impression is that we are just kind of this small group of people that holding on to our, having a grip on the past, that's not true. And you look at eventually, I was I'm very active in the life, particularly in the life movement, and I have been since I saw Silent Scream, which was ultrasound of an abortion procedure, and it tore me apart. And it's still, I think about it, bring it back, it still tears me apart. But that's the truth. It's the truth of what's happening. And so truth wins out, and it does. And people, I encourage people to hope in that and to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Because it is winning. People are recognizing these things. I think some of the other pillars are areas that we're concerned with because they've been challenged. The life thing has been an issue for way too long since Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
So now, 40, 50 years later, finally, people are beginning to see the truth of it, and we're seeing a wave moving back.
Yeah.
So I guess my words are really words of encouragement to keep moving forward, to doing what we know is right.
Yeah.
And we're united in this.
And I guess to persist, regardless of what we hear around us and in the periphery, there are so many times and ways we can get weakened and feel dismantled because we feel like we're in the extreme minority.
Right, and we're not.
We're not.
We're not.
But if we capture that hope that you're talking about, Brother JP, and persist, I think is what you had mentioned before, and just be diligent in not giving in, I think it will come around.
I very much believe that. And I think, that's one of the good things about, I love history. So you're looking at history and, when you're, if you're right in the middle of it and you can't see very far ahead, it's a very, it's not a particularly, it's a narrow point of view. So when you look at history, you're able to, we have the luxury of being able to look it back.
Yeah.
And not and be able to pick moments, but also pick the broader picture and see how things move. So even when we're kind of caught in the little moments, it's good to take a step back and say, okay, wait a minute. And then maybe have to go back in because we have to live life in these moments and fight the battles of these moments.
Yeah.
But I think looking at history, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, I think so too. I would completely agree. Well, Father JP, we thank you so much for sharing your perspective on these pillar principles and giving us some of those important things to consider and to remember and to reflect upon. I'm Todd Bontrager with the Patriot League, reminding you to visit thepatriotleague.org, where you can subscribe to our communications and make a financial contribution to support our work for the pillars. Be sure to subscribe also to our YouTube channel, so that you don't miss our upcoming videos, and we're also on Facebook. On behalf of our entire leadership team, we thank you for watching this Spotlight.